Welcome to the Sunday night There Is a Solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. This meeting is being recorded, so you may visit the Central Ontario Intergroup website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The specific link for the recordings will be posted in the chat. The opinions expressed are those of the individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Our speaker tonight is a compulsive overeater, a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After she shares, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. So please join me in welcoming Jen F., a compulsive overeater from New Jersey.
Hello, good evening, everyone. I am Jen F., a very grateful recovered compulsive overeater in, I always say, South Jersey, right outside of Philadelphia. And I'm very, very blessed and happy to be here with you tonight and a little bit nervous. But before I even get started, I just want to say a little prayer for myself. It's a little prayer that I learned from someone in program, and I think it's just such a great way to start any time I'm speaking or really doing anything. And it just goes like this: God, empty me of me, empty me of my ideas, my thoughts, my plans for this time together in this meeting, and fill me with you, fill me with your purpose, fill me with your grace and mercy, fill me with the words and just exactly what it is you'd like to communicate, and then use me for your goodness, for your glory, and for your purpose. Amen. Amen. And so, yes, I am very happy to be here. And I'm going to go with the what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I actually like starting with what it's like now because it's so exciting and it's so, I just want to get us there, but I do think it's important for laying the foundation of what life was like. So my earliest recollection of enjoying food was in preschool when they had the graham crackers and the grape juice, and I liked eating that, and then I liked taking naps. Those were my two things. And so I would eat my graham cracker and grape juice, and then I would look around for who wasn't eating theirs, and that wasn't too hard because the kids were usually playing and having fun, and I would grab up theirs as well. And when I think forward, fast forward to third grade. So third grade for me was a very defining moment in my awareness. It was health class in third grade, and they took all of us down to the nurse's office, and everyone had to sit on the ground, and you had to get on the scale in front of everybody, and then the nurse would yell out the number. And so it was like, Mary, 42, 56, and then they said Jen, and the number was 99, and the whole class erupted. And that was the first moment that I felt so much shame around my body. Before that, I had no conception of, being a stocky kid. But that just really was such a defining moment for me and such a sad moment. But we moved a lot growing up. My dad worked for a company called IBM, so we moved every 3 years. So it was like every 3 years I had to work hard to really refit in. And life just seemed really out of control. But at that age, you don't realize life is out of control. You don't know how to express it or process it. So I processed it by eating. And I would sneak downstairs in the middle of the night and sneak food. A big thing for me was peanut butter. I would always open the jar of peanut butter and just, eat one spoon of peanut butter and put the peanut butter jar back. And then I would go back and get another and go get another. And I remember one time my mother said, "Who ate all the peanut butter?" And I blamed it on my brother. And he actually got in trouble for that at that moment. But I just couldn't fess up to that. Nobody really knew what was going on with me and the shame. I never went home and said, why am I 99 pounds and what can you do to help me? I just started eating more. At 12 years old, I found pornography in my father's nightstand. And so that formed in my mind what a woman should look like to be attractive. And I knew that I didn't look like that. So that created more body, I guess, dysmorphia, body hatred, self-hatred. And so then the dieting started for me. I had my mother, I asked her if she could help me. She took me to the diet center, it was called at that time. They put me on a very low-calorie diet. And I basically had 47 years, I would say, in the rooms, but not the rooms of OA. I had, 47 years in the rooms of Weight Watchers, Jenny Craig, HCG, the Cookie Diet, the South Beach Diet, Optavia, Atkins, Keto, One Meal a Day, the Green Tea Diet, and on and on and on, constantly in the quest for what was going to work. And no one along the way in those 47 years ever said, maybe you're a compulsive overeater. I didn't know any, we didn't really have addiction in my family, so I didn't know anything about the 12 steps, about AA or anything, but I would be all in on whatever I went for. So if I was going to go for Optavia, let's say, or one of these programs, these pay and ways, I wasn't just going to go for it. I was going to be a coach, and I was going to be the one that would be like championing, like, this is the best thing ever, and I'm never going to stop eating this way. I finally found what it was. And then one day I remember I was talking to my sister-in-law, and she's like, you're ridiculous. This isn't going to be the thing. Just like the last 10 things weren't the thing. And I got so offended at her, like, well, she's negative, Debbie Downer, And meanwhile, there I was a couple of months later, right back in the food, all the way. I was great at losing weight, but I was horrible at keeping it off. I was horrible at sustaining. And each time I lost the weight, and each time I gained the weight back, it just crushed my soul so much. So when I got to my high school graduation, I was always thin for events. High school graduation, thin, 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 which was the goal at that point. And I went to college. I went to college at FIT in the city of New York City. It was the Fashion Institute of Technology. I get there, I'm thin, I'm feeling good. My dad puts money in the, an account that I can use for the semester to buy books and toiletries and things like that. And I already have the meal plan. Well, I spend the whole 2500 pretty much on food in the first like 2 weeks. And then he's like, what did you do with the money? And I was like, well, I had to get, all these different things, but the reality was most of it really had been spent on food. And I would go to the cafeteria, and I had the meal plan, and you could get as much as you wanted. And so that was nice. But then I was back in the dorm one day, and I went in the bathroom, and I heard someone throwing up, and I got really concerned. Like, are you okay? I was knocking on the door. Are you okay? Do you need help? And she's like, no, I'm fine. We all just eat everything we want, and then we stick the blow dryer cord down our throat and we purge so that way we don't gain weight. And I was like, oh, really? Can you talk to me more about that? And so that started 8 years of binging and purging, and it really had a grip on me. And I wanted so hard to come out of it, but there was so much shame around it. I wasn't really able to talk to anyone about it, like my family or, and I would, it would be so bad. I would go to fast food and I would buy a, it would go to McDonald's and I would buy like the most unhealthy meal that I could find. And I would eat the whole meal in my car and then I would purge into the bag. And I would usually be like on the side of the road by a garbage, in a park by a garbage can. I would just throw it out like it never happened and keep on going on with my day, on to the next thing, on to the next thing. And so it really had the grip on me. And every time I would try and tell someone, I was telling them because I wanted to get free of it, but no one had the solution. And so as soon as I told them and I said, I'm not going to do it anymore, I would turn around and I would do it again. So I have some notes here because I don't want to miss anything. So it was really after the 8 years of bulimia, it was gain, lose, gain, lose, gain, lose. It really takes its toll on the body. And in August of 2023, I really began to, feel the insanity of the disease, but I still didn't know I had a disease. I still just thought, like, why can't I lose the weight? Like, I could keep it off for so long. My husband always said, you can always accomplish what you set your mind to. And I was like, you know, he's right, but I couldn't sustain it. I did not have the willpower to sustain it. And, you know, I didn't know that I was powerless until I came into the program. And I read that step one, and it says life is unmanageable, and that I'm powerless over food, and that life is unmanageable. And I started sitting back, and I was like, wow, what is life unmanageable looking like? But even before I got there, I went to therapy, right? Because I was doing all the diets, I'm gaining the weight back, and I said, I know what I need. I have to go to therapy. So I go to therapy, and I said, I really need help with figuring out why I can't sustain weight loss. And she said, I want to help you with that, but I think you're codependent, and like pulled out this really thick book. I think it was like 500 pages. Let's work through this book first. And then once we get through this book, we can tackle, you know, the issue that you want to work on. And I started working with her for about 3 months. And after 3 months, I think we were on like page 29 in the book, and I was still binging, still feeling really bad about things. And I just thought, this isn't helping me right now. I'm sure I do have some codependency, but right now I really wanted to focus on why can't I get free in this area. So I had to do a little breakup with the therapist. It's not you, it's me. I'm going to go look for something else. And it was literally like right after that that I found this book that was loosely based on the 12 steps on Amazon. So a food plan book popped up, and then this other workbook that was loosely based on the 12 steps. And I got both of those books and I read them cover to cover. And I said, you know what? For my birthday, it was in February 12th of 2024, I'm going to give myself the gift of health this year. And so I jumped on the food plan. The food plan was be abstinent sugar and flour. And that seemed radical, but I said, you know what? I'm going to give it a try because I knew those two areas were really tough for me. So I jump on the food plan and I read the book that's kind of loosely based on the 12 steps. And I reach out to the author of the book, and she's in media PA. And I said, you know, I'm reading your book and it's really helpful. She was the author of the loosely based 12-step program book. And so I said, would you counsel me? Would you give me therapy? Because she was a therapist. So she said, okay. And within the first one or two sessions, she mentioned this big book. And I'm like, big book? I've never heard of the big book. What is that? And she said, well, you know, look it up and you might want to get a copy. And she said, you know, and if you get a copy of it, you know, you might want to turn to chapter five. And when you're on chapter five, she said, you might want to read on page 60 down at the bottom. And so I got the book and I opened it up and I read, each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show. Is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. If his arrangements would only stay put, if only people would do as he wished, the show would be great and everybody, including himself, would be pleased. And I just stopped dead in my tracks, like, this is my life. This is my thought process. Why isn't everybody following my script? Why isn't everyone doing what I want them to do? I know best. I'm a smart woman. If everyone would just get in line with my plan and my purpose, then I could be better. They could all be better. And you know, we know the next chapter, it goes down to say what usually happens. The show doesn't come off very well. And that is exactly what was happening in my life. The show was absolutely not coming off very well. So somebody introduced me to a podcast, and it was a podcast. I don't know if I'm allowed to. Am I allowed to name a podcast? It was a podcast called Recovery Jam. And I listened to one of the podcasts of Recovery Jam, and I just cried through the whole thing because I thought, I never knew there were people just like me out there. I always felt different. I always felt isolated. No one ever said, you know, I never heard people talk about that they would binge, that they would purge. I just never heard any of that. So I started listening to the podcasts and just getting as much information as I could. And during one of the podcasts, I heard one of the speakers talking, and I just thought, oh, I really would love to reach out to her and talk with her about a resentment that I have. So I am a homeschool mom. I have a teenage son. And in the disease, we were literally on the verge of like, oh, really going at each other. I mean, it was bad. Every single day, life was difficult. We were fighting. You know, he wasn't following my script and I couldn't take it. And so all I would do is just, I would just get in the food, I would just eat, and then I would numb myself and I would just, you know, I would just think tomorrow's going to be a better day. And then guess what? Tomorrow was never a better day. So I had this ongoing resentment with him that I just, you know, because I never really even heard about resentments until I started listening to the podcast. And then I said, oh, I think maybe she could help me with the resentment. And it took me like a month to get the courage up to reach out and to text her. So I stayed, you know, I stayed with that resentment for another month. And then I reached out and she called me back and I immediately started crying and wailing into the phone and I'm almost like a frantic person. And she said, oh, you know what? I'm gonna have to call you back. And like hung up the phone and I was like, oh my gosh, I just blew it. Like I had the opportunity to talk to this person. I just completely blew it. And I said, if she calls back, I'm gonna pull myself together. You know, I'm talking to myself. Well, she did call back and I was able to talk to her. And she said, so what are you looking for? Parenting advice? Or are you a compulsive overeater? And I'm like, no, I'm a compulsive overeater. And she's like, well, how do you know? Because it sounds to me just like you're looking for parenting advice. Like you want me, I'm not here to help with parenting advice, you know? And she's like, how do you know? And I said, well, I'm still a sugar and flour abstinent at that point. So I've been sugar and flour abstinent since February 12th of 2024, but I learned that that is not true abstinence because I did not have abstinent behaviors. Right. I couldn't walk by the counter if it had nuts on it without taking a big handful of nuts. You know, maybe I would say I'm just going to take a few, but then I'm going back, I'm taking a few more, I'm taking a few more. So in my mind, I was abstinent. But then when I really saw what was happening, just like every other time, there was a slow spiral that was starting to happen. And I was going in this downward progression. And so, you know, I'm very thankful that she said she would be willing. When I finally convinced her that I was indeed a compulsive overeater, then she was willing to help me and to sponsor me. And that was really life-changing. So that started in October of 2025. And the things that I never thought about, I honestly never thought that I was an addict. Like I never thought of myself that way. And up until that point, I never thought life was unmanageable. But yet, all my test results from the doctor were extremely negative. You know, everything was trending in the wrong direction. I was yelling all the time. My husband's like, every time you open your mouth, it's mean and mean-spirited and you're yelling. And, you know, I never knew that I needed to be free from compulsive eating or that I could actually be free in this area. I never knew that just having an abstinent food plan was not enough. And I never knew that there were other people like me. And I never knew that I needed a spiritual experience. Now, why is that? So I came into a strong faith in my 30s, and I have a spiritual background. I'm actually a minister in my faith. I'm a preacher, I'm a teacher. So I was doing all that, but I never let God into this area. I always felt like God could have every other area of my life, but I was not willing to open up this part of my heart to him because I just didn't think he cared and I just didn't think he wanted to be bothered with it. And point blank, I was just too selfish to want to give it up. Like I didn't want to go to him. I would rather go to all those pay and ways, spend all those thousands of dollars than just come into, you know, a place where I opened up myself to God. So, as a result of going through the steps, I didn't know I was coming into a spiritual program. I thought I was coming into, you know, tell me what to do and I'll do it. And so, my what it was like was immediately I had to start committing my food every day. And I had to spend 30 minutes in prayer, reading, and meditation in the morning with God, my higher power, who I call God. I had to make three outreach calls a day. I had to do, well, let me go back. The outreach calls I did not want to do them and I did not see the need for them. I just felt like, again, if I think I know more than everybody, why do I need to do that? But I said I'm willing to go to any length. So I did the outreach calls and I started talking to people. Was it uncomfortable at first? Yes, absolutely. Do I continue to do it now that I'm recovered? Yes, absolutely. I really do appreciate the outreach calls and I've learned so much from everyone that I've talked to, most people that I've talked to. I had to do service to other people. So I had to look outside of myself. And I said, well, you know, I'm homeschooling my son. That's service. She's like, no, that's your choice. That's your obligation. Find something else to do. So I had to find things to do, like go to the supermarket and take the carriages and bring them back up, or make a meal and bring it over to somebody. You know, I really had to work hard to come out of myself in that area. And you know, I'm thankful for that because now I look for ways to be of help to other people. And I had to go to a meeting a day and I didn't balk at that, but I will say at first I was always off camera and I was always doing something else. And then I realized like that wasn't the spirit of what she asked me to do. And so now when I go to a meeting, I really purpose to always be on camera and always be engaged with the speaker because I have to believe that God is speaking through each and every one of you. And I want to be present for that. I don't want to be, you know, miss something and then I miss what God is saying when it's maybe something for me. So, and you know, I had to be rigorously honest. And I heard that term and I just thought, wow, okay, that's going to be a tough one because I really like to exaggerate. Like, I want the story to look good. I always want to make myself look good. So I would do a lot of exaggerating. I would never, it wasn't like big lies, but it was just like little things that would be absolutely not true. But, you know, I would rationalize them away like, well, it didn't hurt anybody when I said that. But if the big book is asking me for rigorous honesty, if God is asking me for rigorous honesty, then and she's asking me for rigorous honesty, then I'm going to work on that. So that means if I don't make any changes to my food plan, and I like how I heard it said on another meeting, it's like if I look at my food plan and I think, oh, I'd rather have this today than that, then I just have to say, okay, sweetie, have it tomorrow. Like put it on your plan for tomorrow. Don't, you know, don't make decisions on the fly because I need the safety of the accountability through that. And then she added one thing to my plan that I know has isn't part of the plan for everyone else, and that was no new wreckage because I was like a steamroller rolling through the house, still rolling over everybody. And I had to become the fun mom. I had to become the laid back mom, the casual mom, you know, the one that's not going to be like asking a lot of questions or getting, you know, on his case about stuff anymore. And one of the most, my when I took my third step, one of the assignments that I had to do was I had to write down the specific things that I would stop doing when I took my third step. So this document, I'm going to just share a couple of them with you because this is a document that I live by all the time and it has really helped me so much. So I said, I'll stop repeating myself to force somebody to agree with me. I would repeat myself over and over and over and over. And then guess what? It sounds like wah, 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 wah. It's not effective. I had to stop that. Stop lecturing, preaching, or giving long explanations to try to change someone's behavior. I would stop giving unsolicited advice because, you know, I don't know best. And I don't have the answer for everybody's, for everybody's life's problems, which, you know, maybe I thought I did in the past. I would stop entering arguments to correct the record. You know, I always had to have the last word to come in and make sure that, you know, I got myself and my point across. Stop replaying conversations in my mind, trying to gain control after the fact. You know, do you ever do that? Like, oh, I should have said this. You know, if I'm still playing it over and over again, then I probably need to do a spot check inventory and figure out what's going on, because I don't need the mental confusion of continuing to play things that have happened over and over again. I had to stop. I had to basically be okay with natural outcomes and consequences for him and not for my son and not try and always be the one that was going to, you know, manipulate and control the outcomes. And just like in the big book where it says, you know, sometimes I have it right here. It's like sometimes we're virtuous and kind and loving, Patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. But on the other hand, I could be mean and egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. And it was so, how confusing is that for a kid, right? To have a mom who's like, one minute I'm happy mom, and one minute I'm like mean mom, you know? And who's going to show up today? Well, I had to stop all that. That was wreckage. And so I put that all aside and I said, you know what, God, I'm going to really trust you. So my biggest takeaway is the fact that this is the spiritual program. And so, like I said, for me, you know, having a spiritual background, I didn't think I needed to read We Agnostics, and I absolutely needed to read We Agnostics. I absolutely needed to clear out the prejudices. I needed to look at the calamity, the pomp, the worship of other things. A big thing that came out in working with my sponsor on this was just how much I idolized my son. You know, as much as we were at odds, I idolized him because I was going to make sure that he was going to be successful, you know, and it was going to be dependent upon my success, was dependent upon his success, because he's going to reflect on me. So if he's not acting right, then it's a bad reflection on me. And I had to work through the steps and work through fourth step, look at the harsh reality and really go to my higher power and just acknowledge and apologize for making my son an idol in my life, and other areas that had that I was really idolizing that were keeping me blocked from the sunlight of the spirit. So here I am, a spiritual person. Here I am, able to go and teach and preach in my faith, but yet in this area I was blocked because, and I was blocked in the other areas too. I mean, it has revolutionized my walk with God, my higher power, my time with him, my service for him, my service to others. When I wake up in the morning now, I can't wake up early enough. You know, I always used to say, ugh, I'm not a morning person. And then, you know what? I felt like God said, stop confessing that, like, you know, because that's not helping you. And so I started saying, yeah, I like getting up in the morning and meeting with God. And I have the you know, I have my journal that I use, my prayer journal. I keep it with me all day because I feel like God is always talking and I don't want to miss anything. So if he says something, I write it down because I have a fast forgetter, someone said. I like the on awake. This is what it's like now. I wake up, I like the on awakening prayer. I basically write down in my journal on awakening, and then I write down the things that I have over the next 24 hours. I look at the day and I say, what are the potential pitfalls for this day? Because one of the things I carry with me all the time is protect your abstinence at all costs. So if I know I'm going to be out, you know, for two meals, I better make sure I have those meals planned and, you know, packaged and ready to go with me. I don't have the luxury of showing up at an event and trusting that they're going to be able to accommodate my food needs. I'm working to protect my abstinence. So I go on awakening. I say, you know, what are going to be the highs? What are going to be the lows of the day? And I do a brain dump. I literally, in my prayer journal, I just write down everything that's on my mind because those are the things that are going to distract me and keep me from really going before God. I get all that down and then I do my spiritual reading. I answer questions. If I feel like God is asking me a question about the reading, I might listen to a meditation. It's like a smorgasbord. I can go with so many different things. I might pick out something in the big book and just choose to really meditate on that for the morning and just see what God is saying. But I always do journal. I always do write. I was never a big journaler and people's, you know, they would say, you should really journal. You should really think about that. And once I started, I just can't stop. And I'm so thankful that I have these things written down in my journal. I will say, I made amends to my son. I made amends to my husband and other people. But the amends to my son was so transformative in my life. We both cried. This is a teenage boy. We looked at each other. We cried. He said, Mom, no, you have been a really good mom. Like, I didn't even want to hear that. I wasn't expecting that. And our relationship right now, I have chills just telling you this, but when I tell you night and day, it is so different. Only God could come into this messed up mom and do what I couldn't do for myself. And I'm just so thankful and I'm so grateful for this program. And I reached out with the resentment for my son. I got the recovery from the food and, right, that's God, the bonus with purchase. And this amazing relationship with my son, this amazing relationship with my husband, my fellows. I love making the outreach calls now, and so many people that I consider such dear friends. I get to go to meetings. I get to hear your shares. I get to share. I mean, there's just so many wonderful benefits as a result of this program. I'm going to end with this because this is like where I always like to go on page 85, 84 and 85. This is where I like to go first because when I read a book, I always go to the, if it's a nonfiction book, I go to the last chapter and that make, and I read that, I say, where are we going? Where are we going to end up? And then once I figure that out, then I can go back and say if I want to read the book or not. But this is my life right now. And I have ceased fighting anything and anyone, even food, for by this time, sanity, it has returned. I am seldom interested in compulsive eating. I have no food temptation. My puppies get a little cookie when they do their business at night before we go to bed. I laugh to myself because sometimes I have my hand right in the cookie box to give them the cookies. No temptation. If tempted, which I'm not, I recoil as from a hot flame. Oh, I react sanely. How great is that? I'm not creating wreckage, and I'm not even having to say to myself, no new wreckage, because that's not even part of who I am anymore. I react sanely and normally, and I find that this has happened automatically. Who did it? Only God. I see that its new attitude towards compulsive eating has been given to me without any thought or effort on my part. I did the work, I went through the steps, but it was given to me by God. And I'll just finish this up to encourage if there's any, newcomers on here. This is how I will live as long as I keep in fit spiritual condition. And I am committed to doing that. I'm committed to showing up. I'm committed to showing up for each one of you and for myself. And with that, I will pass.
Thank you so much, Jen. That was really, really great. Thank you so much.